We are all slaves.
Prejudice. Wrote a song about it? Like to hear it? Here it go.
Freedom mind!
And the rest will follow. Be colorblind, don't be so shallow. Hey, topic of today, we are all slaves. What? What do you mean? We are all slaves. Definition, the state of being a slave, bondage, enslavement. Britannica, slavery is a condition in which one human being is owned by another. Are you your own prisoner? Who or what has you bound? Is it oneself? Is it another person? Is it your mind? Fear, hate, sex, drugs, gambling, alcohol, money? Bring your burning questions to the table to discuss these topics. Let's talk about them this evening and see if you can free your mind, free yourself. Worldwide listeners, come on, join us, and let's just get those burning thoughts and questions off your chest on Let's Do It Radio. Miss Inez says, let's talk about it. We are all slaves. I am your hostess, Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer of Anaïs.co Designs, and also now a best-selling author in the U.S. and in the U.K. So I am internationally known somewhat as a best-selling author to She Said Yes to Herself Unapologetically, the anthology, which is a compilation of 31 women who created this book. So sometimes I may be a slave to saying yes and not apologetically either. So I want to know I'm broadcasting and welcome you, the worldwide listening audience, to this Tuesday, November the 14th, 2023. And you can call in at 845-241-9985, 845-241-9985, to be on the air, Skype, or listen in the chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/Let's Do It Radio, or you know my number, you could text me. And in case you miss it, you can listen to past episodes on demand at the same www.blogtalkradio.com/Let's Do It Radio, and search for the episode you like to listen to and play it. You can also share these episodes as well, or let other people know on social media that, hey, I listen to Let's Talk Radio. Let's Do It Radio with Miss Inez Says. Let's talk about it. So we're going to talk about it, but let's do some housekeeping things. You can donate to this to keep me on the air, to Cash App at $ANAISEVALCOUR, or to Venmo at MZINEZ, or to Zelle, if you know my tell, or my email, or my snail mail. You can send me dollars to keep us on the air. You blog talk radio. Thank you, darling. So we are going to get started. First, I found some things on Quora.com. If we are all slaves to something, what are we slave to? You are a slave. You probably do not realize it, but you are. Movies and public schools like to portray slaves as bound by chains and beaten with whips, creating a polarized image of slavery that can be pointed to with the comment, you are not like that, therefore you are not a slave. But history shows that slaves have been treated in all manner of ways. Some more cruel than others, yet even with the most kind treatment, a slave remains a slave. Set aside the stereotype image of a slave as a bleeding, chain-bound wretch. Slaves throughout history are often hard to recognize. In some cases, such as the medieval serfs, they are held slaves to the rulers by religious beliefs and did not see themselves as slaves, even though they were treated as such. The favored slaves of Asian potentates wore jewels to make a movie star gasp. yet they still slave for all their finery and comfort. So, what is a slave? How do we define a slave? What test do we use to tell if someone is a slave? What makes them different from free people? Free people can say no. Free people can refuse demands for their money, time, and children. Slaves cannot. There is no freedom without the freedom to say no. Excuse me. If someone demands that you do something and you say no and refuse to do it, then you are a free human being. If you can be forced to do something or surrender something that you do not wish to, then you are a slave. No other test needed to be applied. Freedom is the freedom to say no. N-O, no. Let's form our mouth to say no. That's sometimes hard to some people because I might be a slave to that. When you are forced to surrender half your life's work to the government in ever-ceasing taxes, then you are a slave. Throughout history, slaves were expected to perform the work needed for their own upkeep, then perform additional work for the rulers. Roman slaves, the ratio for work for self versus work for rulers was about 50-50. The same ratio applied to medieval serfs and even to the slaves of the American South. And when you add up all the overt taxes, covert fees, tariffs, excises, plus the increased price you pay for products to pay the taxes of companies that make those products, you will find that Americans are at the same half for sale versus half for ruler ratio. Can you say no to the confiscation of half of your life? Can you get the masters to maybe reduce the burden by a significant amount? No. Congratulations. Then you are a slave. The masters have decided they want wars on anyone living over oil. The idea is that it is better for American corporations to steal the oil they need than to pay for it. Millions of Americans and millions more around the globe did not want the war. But the master started them anyway by lying to the people. Confused, you refuse the war? Can you refuse being lied to? No? Congratulations. You are a slave. The rulers want your children for their future wars. Legislation for a draft is already in progress. Can you refuse the confiscation of your children? Think about human trafficking. You don't know where your children are. You don't know who they're being trafficked to. So no, you are a slave. Congratulations. Also in Congress is legislation for a voluntary national service program. Also in Congress is legislation for a voluntary national service program. It is being called voluntary to get around the 13th Amendment, but voluntarism implies a choice, and no choice is being offered here. You cannot say no. Congratulations, you are a slave. The government has been caught lying over and over again to the people from whom really did 9/11, to the legality of the tax system, to Cheney's Energy Task Force papers, to Saddam's WMDs. Americans are the most lied to people on earth. Can you refuse to be lied to? Can you punish the liars? No. Congratulations, you are a slave. Vote fraud is rampant in the nation. That's what they say. And the mandated imposition of auditless electronic voting systems means that elections will be decided, as Stalin admitted, not by those who vote, but by those who count the vote. Can you refuse a dishonest voting process? No. Congratulations. You are a slave. Just because you cannot see the slave chains doesn't mean that they are not there. Chains are made of steel are obvious, but chains made of beliefs are not always recognized for what they are. Hitler enslaved the German people to war with a belief that Poland was about to invade. LBJ, Lyndon B. Johnson, enslaved the American people to war with the belief that Vietnam had attacked the USS Maddox in the Gulf of Tonkin. Poland wasn't invading. There were no torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin, but the slaves held by invisible chains of beliefs went to war. Millions died. In 2003, however, I love that word, however, the chains started to become visible. The constitutional right to freedom of expression was confined to free speech zones. A slave may have an opinion so long as it was not expressed where it might affect the other slaves. The constitutional right to an armed populace, the means by which the men who set up a nation of free citizens hope to keep them free, is under constant attack from those who fear a nation of free citizens and who will not sleep soundly until we are a nation entirely of slaves. Armed citizens can, after all, say no and make it stick. That was why there was a Second Amendment, to allow the people to say no to those who would return them to the slavery they had so recently escaped from. Other constitutional rights and protections have been set aside. The government can now search through your private records without cause, without warrant, even break into your home and not have to tell you. Simply by declaring a citizen an enemy combatant, that government can now lock up us citizens without a charge and without a lawyer. You can be prevented from traveling simply for having the wrong name. If you purchase too much gold or take home too much cash or hoard food, the government will take notice. Having a farmer's almanac is grounds for suspicion. Talking about the Constitution is now deemed grounds to suspect a terrorist link. Torture is now espoused as necessary to deal with the crisis. Were you able to refuse those changes in the Constitution? No. Congratulations. You are a slave. The government at all levels has borrowed trillions of dollars and stuck your kids with the payments. Children not even born will be paying off the bills. To declare the lives of children not yet born, let alone old enough to vote, indentured to the state, is in slavery, most obvious and audacious. Can you refuse responsibility for payments on debts the government incurred without your permission? No. During the debate on TARP, more than 90% of Americans opposed using taxpayer money to help rich Wall Street con artists escape the costly mistakes of their own making. Did Congress listen when you said no?
Congratulations. You are a slave. The government has borrowed so much money that it has long ago run out of gold to pledge as collateral on the debts. Starting in Nixon's administration, natural resources were used as collateral for the mounting debts, borrow more money, promise a chunk of public lands as collateral. These land pledges were concealed behind environmentalism to disguise the real purpose. Numerous names such as wilderness reserves, wetland, heritage river, and so forth were used to conceal the true scale of the confiscation. But end result? Yes, end result was the same. Huge tracts of public land containing natural resources were walled away from the public that owned them, mortgaged to the holders of U.S. government debt. We are well on our way from being citizens to being mere tenants. We are able to refuse having your public lands placed at risk by the U.S. government to cover loans you never authorized the government to make. Oh, excuse me. Were you able to refuse having your public lands placed at risk by the U.S. government to cover loans you never authorized the government to make? No. Congratulations. You are a slave. Trust funds under government control are being looted from the Social Security Trust Fund to Native American trust accounts to federal retirement funds. Congress pays a lip service to the looting of Social Security, but considers only more taxes to cover the looted shortfall. Meanwhile, court cases over other looted trust accounts drag on without resolution. Are you able to refuse corrupt and dishonest government? Cuss word, no. So, congratulations. You are a slave. Yes, I'm Massa. You's a slave. Yes, sir. Yes, I'm doing some tap dancing over here because I's a slave. You are a slave because the ruling class can do what they want, take what they want, and you cannot refuse. You may have freedom to decide what television channel to watch tonight or just which style car you will drive to your work in, but little power over the rest of your life. Even that home you have worked to pay for over the last decade can be taken from you at a moment's notice via eminent domain or the force majeure clause in your mortgage agreement or skyrocketing interest rates. Can you refuse? No. Congratulations. You are a slave. In October 2001, this person wrote that more damage would be done to our nation by those claiming to save us from the terrorists than by an actual terrorist act. Even as Bush claimed that the terrorists hated the U.S. because of our freedom, he took what few remaining freedoms we had away until we are more watched, more spied on, more limited, more silenced, more taxed, and more enslaved than at any other time in our nation's history. Not only are we slaves, we are at last starting to see that we have been slaves all along. Yes, not just black people, not just Asian people, not just Native American people, but all of us have been slaves all along. We did not have rights because a right cannot be taken away. What we had were indulgences, granted by the masters to the slaves to be removed when the masters grow fearful of the slaves' resentment and anger. This person watched through the years as people cared about, lost their homes, their businesses, as the labors of the lifetime evaporated in stock market manipulations by corporate crooks. These Americans who had worked hard to achieve the American dream lost it all through no fault of their own. Our schools are broke, hospitals understaffed, the roads and bridges and rails of the nations are crumbling while billions of dollars are given away to foreign nations, favored cronies, and ravenous war machines. The priorities of the government that feeds on taxes seems focused everywhere but on those who pay those taxes, and we cannot seem to refuse that either. This person thinks that the state of the nation can be summed up by the image of homeless people camped out in front of boarded up and foreclosed homes. Give those people somewhere to stay. Let them have a roof over their head. It's better than having them camped out in tents along the highways and the byways, under overpasses, by the rivers. That's crazy. The United States is like the other slave empire, Rome, and we think it is headed for the same fate. Can you imagine Roman Empire? Oh, Lord Jesus. Yes, we are headed for the same fate. The U.S. will eventually lose their war of conquest of the world. The U.S. does not have enough troops to garrison the planet, and as Hitler learned much too late, merely having superior weapons isn't going to win a war when you pissed off absolutely everyone else in the world. On a more practical level, sooner or later, the U.S. will wind up at war with someone who really does have nuclear weapons of mass destruction. That this is the government plan, is witnessed by the numerous underground facilities which have been built or upgraded in recent years. You paid for them, but you won't be allowed in them. Let me say that again. You paid for them, but you won't be allowed in them. Such an attack on the U.S. is a small price to pay for those who promote these wars, not for America, but for another nation standing by while its victims are tricked into fighting each other. The United States has allowed its manufacturing to decay over the last 30 years. We don't even make anything in America anymore or in the United States anymore. In a major war, we lack the industrial capacity to sustain the kind of production of war material needed to prevail in a prolonged conflict. With our economy on the brink of default, our next war will likely be our last. Minus a war, mind you, the U.S. government will eventually collapse, as did the Soviet Union, dragged down by debt and corruption. As the final collapse looms closer, look for the looting of the nation to become even more bolder than it is now. The last official act of any government is to loot the nation. This person who I'm reading this information from is opposed to violence. They wish it could be avoided, but do believe that this nation is headed towards a collision between the rulers and the ruled. The government fears this as well, or we wouldn't see so much bulletproof Lexan between us and our public servants. I think, or this person thinks, that the reason we have not yet seen it yet is that Americans have been conditioned to expect a hero or savior to come and make things right. We know things have gone wrong, but we are waiting for someone else to fix it. Superman, the Calvary, riding to the rescue, Spartacus, the Messiah, Batman, what really happened, etc. The revolution will not be televised. It will not be supervised. It's going to be extinct. We won't have any television. We won't have anything. This belief that one should wait quietly for a hero is part of the slavery mechanism to keep you in place. Rendering unto Caesar, breeding more slaves, waiting for salvation that never comes. However, as history has shown, even the patience of an entire people can run out. And this person predicts that when the final upheaval comes, it will arrive as suddenly as that which occurred in Romania. In November 1989, Romania seemed stable until the rule of Nicolae Ceausescu. I think that's right. 1 month later, a sporting event erupted into a spontaneous political protest, and on December the 25th, Nicolae Ceausescu was tried and sentenced to death. He proved that tyrants should not confuse silence with consent. The Romanian people finally realized that nobody was coming to save them, and they had the courage to save themselves. The collapse of the USSR was equally rapid and almost as unexpected. So shall it be in the US? Yes, like this person said, they hope they're wrong in the forecast. However, it is clear that the U.S. government is under the control of individuals intent on personal enrichment. Sound familiar? Or loyalty to a foreign nation above our own. Sound familiar? And seeing no reason at all not to continue on their present course. Sound familiar? Confrontation seems inevitable. The founding fathers set up a nation in which government was by the consent of the people. We the people agreed to certain obligations, and the government we allowed to care for our national sovereignty agreed to abide by certain limits set forth in the Constitution. The present government has broken the agreement, discarding the constitutional limits on their power and authority, while at the same time piling more and more obligations onto the people. Were you able to refuse them? No. This, more than any of the other reasons, is why you have ceased to be a free human being and are now a slave. You are a slave. When you live under government that takes your wealth and your children, and lies to you to keep you docile and scares you to keep you obedient, how can it be otherwise? Come on here. You are a slave. You can stay that way or not. It's that simple. Nobody is coming to save you. There are no heroes, no Calvary riding to the rescue, whether you and your children will live as slaves or as free human beings is entirely up to you. And that was written by, let me see who that was written by. Dang it, you know you can't never find nothing when you want it. By Sassy Priyard Hashimi. Okay? I believe that's right. Nope, I lied. I'm sorry. This was done by... Okay, here we go. This was written by, let me get up to the top, Kayla Reese. Kayla Reese, thank you for that, because that was wonderful. It was, what do you call it, eye-opening. It was a lot of things, and I just appreciate you writing that, please, to whom we are humans being slaves. Yes, the question is, we are all slaves. Are you a slave? I am. Yes, I am. This person says, this is everyone is a slave. The thing that matters is that we are, is what we are enslaved to. Some people are enslaved to love, happiness, contentment, smile, and benevolence. Benevolence, not malevolence, benevolence. Some people are enslaved to attention, luxury, greed, beauty, and show off. You know, some that sounds like people on Instagram, Facebook. They always have to have a picture on Facebook. They always have to show off themselves on Facebook. What if these things were shut down? What would you be a slave to? Later on, we're going to be a slave to technology. It's up to the individual to decide his or her own master. Nevertheless, we are all slaves. Yes. For better or worse, we are slaves to food and this person's biological needs, attention, companionship, love, learning, their mobile device, social media, as I just said, my expectations, people's impressions, and really other people. So they think that the only way out of this dead approach is to transcend the self. So, that is true because, hey, sometimes we just don't know what we're enslaved to until we find out that we're enslaved to a whole bunch of things, a whole bunch of things. I'm going to read just a little excerpt from what this person as a slave to and from. And this is anonymous, and it's a disclaimer. They're saying, I am writing from the perspective of a homegrown American modern slave, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I might. I'll just see. Has anybody else joined us? We do have somebody who is Skyped in. Come on, act right. Come on. Okay. It says, obvious trigger warnings of rape, forced child labor, child prostitution, child abuse, etc. The first time I remember having sex, I was 3 years old. Two men owned me. I don't remember their names. My memory is patchy, and I was rather young during this part of my life. I'll call them Wolf and Lockhart. Wolf was grisly, gruff, and violent. Lockhart was blonde, manipulative, and unpredictable. I was one of the lucky ones. I got to live with my parents and go to school through this. But despite all of this, I was owned. Hey, Sarge, how you doing out there? Welcome, welcome, welcome. Wolf and Lockhart used me as a more or less as a sex toy and eventually realized that they could make money off of me. Remember, this person was 3 years old. Welcome, Sarge. If you want to say something, you can always join me at 845-241-9985. 845-241-9985. They began selling my body and sometimes my labor, letting people, penetrate me, and less often, clean people's houses. They filmed me, but I'm not sure if it's online. If I misbehave, they beat me. I tried to run a few times, but I was beaten, and once Wolf threatened to murder me. He cut my genitals and threatened to stab my vagina and private parts and told me if I ever told anyone, he would F me up until I ripped in half. I didn't say a word until I was 18 and only to friends online, where I was mostly anonymous. My life was fear and pain and exhaustion. We're talking about being slaves, y'all. This person was a slave to Wolf and Lockhart. Despite being a smart kid, I drifted in school continuously, getting notices of inattention, distraction, and being more or less in my own world. My cuts and bruises and limps were blamed on my infamous clumsiness. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me see. I think Sarge is joining me. Sarge, is that you?
Sister Inez, I didn't expect me to turn down an invitation to have a conversation with you.
Hey, I never turned down a conversation with the Sarge. How you doing, fine sir?
I appreciate it very much taking my call, and I appreciate very much the commentary you've put in on this subject because I think it is crucial. But I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit with this notion that we're all slaves. Where I take a bit of exception with you is in that there is an attempt to enslave us, probably unlike anything we've ever seen before. And to some extent, it is successful amongst a great part of the population. Now, had you said there is an attempt to enslave us, of that, I would agree with you 1,000%. They haven't succeeded yet, so we're not slaves. But if we allow the trends to continue as they are going, there's no doubt we will be, if not slaves, serfs. Because that is what, I mean, we are witnessing, the culmination of the Obama-Biden administration, which set all of this into overdrive. It's been going on for 60 years, but really relatively slowly. Obama and Biden combined have set it in the overdrive, hyperdrive, hypersonic speed. And that's what we're witnessing now, and that's why it's so startling. We were like frogs in the pot, and they were just gradually turning up the heat in the pot. Now, they are just letting it all, I mean, they're just not gradually turning up. They just turned the blowpipe
underneath
it.
It's boiling now, huh? It's starting to boil.
Well, we're noticing it. And we're noticing it's boiling over before they had a chance to make it gradual. You know, I mean, I think the COVID pandemic and the questionable election, the presidential election 2020, have laid their plans bare for all to see. And I think it is epitomized by this persecution of Donald John Trump. Because rightly or wrongly, They perceive them as an existential threat to their ambition. And they are determined, since he is probably the most powerful avatar of a institutional and governmental attempt to throw a monkey wrench into what's happening. I mean, Donald Trump, for all of his imperfections, let's look at what he did when he was in office, not what he tweeted or some intemperate remark he may have made. Let's look at what he did. He gave us tax cuts. He gave us energy independence. He gave us peace accords in the Middle East. He gave us tariffs on China. He was rejecting globalism. He gave us a secure border. Every one of the things that I just said is anathema to the globalist World Economic Forum status oligarchic fascist community that is seeking to do the very things you're talking about, enslave us. So I think, yeah, all the signs are here. We can see what's going on. The question is, are we going to allow ourselves to become enslaved or to become serfs? That's the question.
Good question. Well, some people are slaves and some people are serfs, you know, and depending on what you have, which we call it, buckets you've fallen into, that's where you are until you come up out of those buckets. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Most of what you said was distorted, and then all of a sudden you came in clear, so I didn't hear all the question precisely. Can you repeat it, please?
I said, it depends. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I hear you now. You're fine. You're clear.
Okay. I said, it all depends on what bucket you fall in, if you fall in the surf side or the slave side. But you can come out of those buckets, can you not? You have to transcend yourself into not feeling it, that you are a slave or a serf.
Yeah, there are avenues out of serfdom, and there are certainly ways to prevent our country from being ensnared in serfdom. The only question is, are we going to avail ourselves of them? A lot of people like the idea of the promised security of the socialist welfare state, and they're probably willing to give up everything to get it. Now, the only question is, how many people are willing to do that? Or are there going to be people who are going to be dedicated to the idea of liberty, freedom, and a constitutional republic? I think right now there's a battle between those very things.
Okay. And you think it's a battle because of the Biden-Obama administration?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. That's not, and don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to pretend they are the only source of all of this angst and anarcho-tyranny and other things they're doing. They're not the only source of it. They are the most prominent in our lives. Look at everything the Biden administration is doing. It's one edict after another. Think about it. Have you ever seen more attempts to regulate us? Ever? From one administration? It's one new regulation after another. One prohibition after another. One new directive passed for the country. You will be an electrical vehicle by 2030. You will not use fossil fuels. You cannot have a gas stove. You cannot have a toilet that flushes well. You can't have one regulation. You can't have a firearm with a pistol brace. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's on and on, one regulation after another after another after another. I mean, and people will say, oh, that's for our own good. I've never seen anything like it. These people have learned this stuff in college. And they've imbibed these lessons that the government exists for the benefit of the people, and the purpose of government is to be a big daddy and guide you into what's best for you. And ultimately, you will own nothing and you will be happy. We'll decide what you need and what is best for you. After all, at a certain point, like Obama said, I think you've made enough money, unless, of course, you're Obama, in which case the amount of money you can make is theoretically unlimited. You get Netflix deals and all sorts of speaking engagements and everything else. Here, but rules for thee and not for me.
So what do you think we need to do about it besides get Biden out of office?
Well, right now, I think we still have the possibility of not eliminating all of it, because that's going to take a while. I mean, I'd say it took us between, with the onset of the progressive era at the beginning of the 20th century, it's probably take us somewhere close to 100 years to get to where we are now. So it's going to take a little bit to unravel it. I think we can begin the long road back. We can begin to fight back, and we do that by putting people into office and elsewhere who believe in a constitutional republic and believe in individual liberty. And I think that man on the national scene who best epitomized it, however imperfectly, was Donald John Trump. I mean, there are probably others who did do a better job, but none of them at this point have the national recognition that he has. And and so given what the options are right now, and given the course he was on before he was so unceremoniously deprived of, I believe, his rightful second term, I'm willing to give him a shot at what he could do the second time with the education he has acquired in the meantime, because he's been educated by these forces that are arrayed against him and, by extension, us.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I mean, could you ever imagine a former president that would be tried on things like what's going on in New York right now, that heretofore have never been charged against anyone, much less a former president? I mean, never have these charges, using a consumer protection law that was intended to protect debtors from financial institutions. You got a corrupt attorney general who violated every rule of ethics I know of in the political system of New York State by campaigning. The core of her campaign was devoted to getting one individual by name with no evidence to support why she was going after him. Now, that all occurred in plain sight. She wasn't brought up on ethics charges formally before any commission in the state of New York. And then she took a consumer protection law that was intended to protect debtors from financial institutions. And then she says, I'm going to protect the financial institutions from the debtor, even though there was no victim. No one suffered any injury. But not the financial institutions, not the state of New York, not the people who were employed by the expansion of Trump's businesses, the people who were employed at above average salaries in that particular industry, not the tax base that because they claim his property was overvalued, he paid more taxes. No, there's no injury to anyone but this aggrieved sense of grievance from this fanatical woman who calls herself an attorney general. I've never seen anything like this. And by the way, the New York State Supreme Court, for instance, said that in order to have a fraud, even though I know he wasn't quite charged with fraud, this is like a consumer protection civil statute. In order to have a fraud, the New York Supreme Court state said there has to be a discernible individual to a group or an individual or group of people. There was none. There was none. Everybody prospered. This is lawfare. This is what they do. This is the way they are turning the law on its head to go after their political enemies. This is lawfare. They're doing it to PTA fans who go to PTA meetings to protest the rot that's being taught by the children in school. If they get a little obstreperous, they're called terrorists. While at the same time, they seemingly ignore people who go on the state houses, the United States Capitol building, deface the White House, and they don't seem to be doing very much against them.
You talking about January 6th?
Well, I know. I'm talking about what these Palestinian supporters were just doing the other day.
Oh, I didn't.
Yes, I am also referring to January 6th. And by the way, have you seen the latest news to come out of Fulton County, Georgia? That means you're not familiar with the case of Favorito versus Juan. Favorito is spelled F-A-V-O-R-I-T-O. and Juan is spelled W-A-N. It is a case that has been granted certiorari in Fulton County and is being heard now. And what it involves is a case of a suit by a support organization that alleges that 150,000 ballots were fraudulently entered and sent in for Joe Biden. And these votes, they wanted the state of Georgia to examine these at trial. They asked for trial to have these votes examined. And now all of a sudden they've come up missing after they were being ordered to be retained in custody by the state of Georgia, or rather Fulton County. Now they've come up missing. The poll watcher, or rather an election poll worker, described these ballots as being mail-in ballots that were returned to Fulton County. They're unfolded. They are in essentially pristine condition. They all have identical markings that indicate they were run through a printer, that almost all of them are Joe Biden. And these were ordered to be retained by Fulton County. Now they come up missing. And the two privately contracted lawyers that were retained by Fulton County to defend Fulton County in this case have now withdrawn. They have requested the judge to withdraw them from the case because, I don't know if you know this or not, but if you're attorney of record on a case that has been scheduled on a docket before the court, you have to give the court's permission to withdraw from the case. Otherwise, you risk censure or other disciplinary action before the bar. So you gotta get official permission from the court to withdraw from it. Now, they've asked to withdraw from it. Now, it's been my experience that when lawyers ask to withdraw from a case, it is because they are fearful of being criminally implicated in the case by some action of their client. As officers of court, they cannot knowingly countenance criminal activity or perjury. So rather than get implicated and caught up in it, they have asked to withdraw. Now that is speculation, admittedly. But I find more often than not that is the reason for it.
Okay.
I think they know that the county of Fulton or some officials in Fulton County have either offered some illegal evidence, they destroyed evidence, or they're prepared to perjure themselves in this case. And they don't want to have anything to do with it. At the same time, they don't want to incriminate their clients.
Gotcha.
Again, that's speculation, but given the corruption going on around here, I don't see why that's so unreasonable to assume.
Nothing's unreasonable these days.
No.
At all. The way that this world is going, everything is up for grabs. I mean, you know.
That's right.
Everything.
So again, the people involved is Donald Samuels, one of the lawyers, another was Amanda Clark, and they're two top-tier criminal defense lawyers, and it was a civil case. And they were trying to review the physical paper ballots in the county that the court had ordered retained for examination by the court. And they were representing the Fulton County Board of Registrations and Elections. Teresa Crawford and Aaron Johnson, two Democratic members of that board. And when the case was remanded back to the Superior Court, it was assigned to a new judge. And then one of the plaintiffs in the suit, or rather the defendants in the suit, filed a motion to recuse the judge after he presided over Danny Willis's election grand jury and release private excerpts from the grand jury report. Despite the fact that the Georgia law requiring the motion to be addressed within 90 days, it was still awaiting a decision and a trial date.
You be watching this stuff real close, don't you?
You're damn right I do, because I believe Donald Trump at this election was stolen from Donald Trump. I'm not going to even talk about Dominion voting machines and any of that stuff, because even though I think there's a strong link to that, I'm just going to talk about the violation of the Constitution and the fact that courts in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin ruled mail-in ballots in that state, in those states, to be illegal. Number one, the Pennsylvania court said that universal mail-in balloting, the laws on universal mail-in balloting were changed and violated the Pennsylvania state constitution, because the Pennsylvania state constitution requires a strict format to allow people to vote by mail and absentee. The constitution does. They changed the law without amending the constitution first in Pennsylvania. And in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Supreme Court just flat out ruled that drop ballot boxes in the state of Wisconsin were illegal. Now, they certified the votes from both of those states, despite the fact they had this questionable, unconstitutional change in election law. Georgia did the same thing. That's three states that I believe should have had their electoral vote sent back to the state when it went to the Congress for certification, so they could reconsider it in light of the fact that they violated Article 2 of the Constitution.
Everything is so, how do I want to say this? Everything seems to be violated. Everything seems to be wrong.
Oh, they were talking about Arizona. Yeah, they were talking about what happened in Arizona. And by the way, there's something else that just came up about another stuff that just came out about Dominion voting machines. I forgot exactly. Let me see. I took some notes on that. I want to make sure I get it right as to what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a federal judge has ordered a trial about Dominion voting machines and whether or not this is for Georgia. Now, Georgia's Dominion voting machine, whether or not major cybersecurity flaws amount to a violation of voter constitutional rights to cast their votes and have those votes accurately counted. This is a case that's now scheduled for a federal hearing. See, all of Fatty Willis's cases being undermined by all this new information. Now, I don't know what the Trump defense team is doing with this, but what they ought to be able to, they don't even have to prove there was fraud. Remember, Donald Trump is being charged with RICO violations and fraud because he's alleged to have committed fraud against the people of Georgia because he really didn't believe the election was stolen from him. This information, I'm certain that he's aware of all of it. This will show if he's aware of this, that he had every reason to believe it was fraudulent. He couldn't have been acting in bad faith or fraudulently. No matter what the truth of the matter is, the evidence is more than enough to cause him suspicion. Remember, if they could do this to one of the most powerful men who have ever lived, not only a former president, but a president that came out of nowhere, was a billionaire before he became a president, and if they could do this to someone like him because he represents a threat to him, what do you think they do? How do you think they do the rest of us?
As I read earlier, they just control us, basically. They do things underhandedly. They undercut everything. They, they have a right to do whatever they want to do and deem it necessary to do it. And what were they saying in here? What I was just reading? It's like, okay, what do you call it? Domain. What do you call it? Let me go back to my, where am I here? Eminent domain. You know, so we're not even safe anywhere, are we? We're not safe. We don't have any rights.
Sister Inez, all they have to do is use their magical three words. And the magical three words that popped up is like a shibboleth, that they invoke whenever they see a threat to their ambitions and their agenda. They just invoke it whenever they want to cut you down to democracy.
Mm.
It's like a holy writ with them. You know, if you're questioning the outcome of an election, if you're wondering whether or not a man can suddenly transfer himself into a woman, and if you question it, they will invoke a fascist regime of censorship against you, to say nothing of all the other things like the government trying to set up disinformation. But can you imagine our United States government formally attempting to set up a government agency that monitors disinformation and puts pressure on private media companies to censor them? I mean, when you see things like this, what other conclusions can you draw? We've never done this in America. I guess the closest thing prior to this was Woodrow Wilson during the First World War with the Red Scare, and his attempt to crack down on critics of the First World War, but that was a relatively brief period that stuff went down. It didn't last long beyond the Wilson administration. I think they're seeking to institutionalize this kind of stuff.
It's just too much. It's just much too much. We're getting to be a state of USSR. We're not even the United States anymore. We're ununited, actually. We are not united. We are ununited. We're just the state. That's all we are. That is all we are.
Man, it's Soviet. This country is getting real Soviet.
That's what I just said, the USSR. That's what I said, the Soviet. That's what we're getting to be.
Yeah.
Dictatorship and, it's...
control. You're guilty of wrong think. Double new speak. You're supposed to adopt their new speak and double think. And a double plus ungood. And we've always been at war with East Asia. I mean, this is the kind of thinking I expect you to adopt. You're not supposed to think twice about it. They think 1984 wasn't a cautionary tale. They think 1984 was an instruction manual.
We're not going to have the right to do anything. Not the right to bear arms, not the right to do anything. I don't care about bearing arms more than, arms seems to be being bit more, well, I don't know even what I said. People using guns and stuff just because. I mean, it's how many mass shootings have we had? 500 and some, from what I had read earlier. In the last couple of months, it's 500 some odd mass shootings. That is just way too many.
Look at the selectivity of the ones they choose to highlight. Notice it.
Let's see, I'm looking at how many messages in America in 2023.
See, they're very selective about the ones they choose to highlight. They don't highlight the innumerable mass shootings in the inner city. They downplay them. They give them brief coverage, if that. But the ones they choose to highlight are the ones that give them the most political advantage. Notice it. Look at the lengths they went to conceal the tranny festo of the Nashville shooter. Have you read the pages that were leaked? Have you read what this psychotic young woman put down in her book?
Did you
read it?
Of what shooting? I didn't hear what shooting you said.
The one in Nashville with the transgender woman who went into the Conference Governor's School and killed 6 people and wounded a bunch of others?
Mm-mm.
In Nashville. And they kept her manifesto secret. People kept saying, her manifesto. We want to read what was on her mind, and they kept it covered up. Well, apparently, some law enforcement officers who were sick of the cover-up and sick of it trying to prevent us from seeing what motivated this young woman, they decided to release excerpts from it. And it reveals a sick, twisted, and deranged mind. And not only had this young woman transgendered herself from a woman into a man, she looked in the mirror, and rather than see herself as a young white woman, she transgendered herself, if you will, into an oppressed victim minority and internalized and used the language, the intersexual Marxist critical race theory dicta of the racial industrial complex. She used all of the words in her hate-filled rant against the people she intended to kill. That's why they didn't want us to see it, Inez. They didn't want us to draw the wrong conclusion.
Wow.
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna put a link to it in the chat room down there. And you can go there and read it for yourself, because this young woman, you know, it's been verified, by the way, as being legit, because the mayor of the city announced an investigation into who leaked it and why. So he verified that it's legit. And remember, they're trying to keep it secret. The FBI and the city of Nashville have been trying to keep this secret. But I'm going to give you a link to this, and you need to read this for yourself, because it is eye-opening. I knew that we didn't see it for the very reasons that are revealed in this manifesto. I now know for sure why they didn't want us to see it. Here, I just gave you the link. The link is there. You can go to that. Steven Crowder is a conservative gadfly. He's on YouTube. He does a lot of work challenging liberal orthodoxy and a radical progressive orthodoxy. And apparently somebody sent those pages to him, and he published them. And then he got demonetized or something for it. I mean, it's unbelievable. But it's the legit thing. I mean, the vile language she uses, the hate, she calls them things like faggots and faggot crackers, and I can't wait to see to shoot your dicks off, and, your mop-haired, yellow mop-haired, you know. I mean, children, she's talking about, she's looking forward to a high body count. I mean, it's hate, you got to read it.
This is off of Facebook anyway. Nashville shooting manifesto.
Yeah, they're very selective about the information they want us to have and the information they don't want us to have. And this is what tyrannies do. This is where tyrannies operate. And we're witnessing the United States has a different style of tyranny. You don't see people run around with jack boots and armbands. You see people running around with soft, soothing, therapeutic words of how what they're really trying to do is only for your own good. It's like the iron fist and the velvet glove type of tyranny, what we got here in the United States. And it's even, it may be even more insidious for that reason. It's kind of a feminized, soft tyranny, you know what I mean? And it's really kind of disconcerting.
Yeah, I'll have to go after the White Smith school shooters. Yes, that's what I've been released. Okay. Let me go over this page here. Where'd it go?
Yeah, sis, I tell you, you're right. You pretty much hit the nail on the head with your show tonight, except for the fact that I just want to stress we're not slaves yet. We have options. There are things we can do. But if we don't exercise these options, yes, we will be slaves or serfs.
Oh, but I mean, some people are slaves to some things, it may not be the same thing. I mean, it could be slave to sex. It could be slave to gambling, drugs, all those things, you know. So that's what I'm talking about right there. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, you can definitely enslave yourself. But usually those are voluntary forms of enslavement. I'm more worried about the kind of, because that's where your therapy and, you know, ways to help people through things, addiction. I think it's more like an addiction that's enslaving. But I'm talking about the kind of enslavement that is imposed upon you.
Huh.
Not one that you impose upon yourself.
That page is not coming up. Let me see. It says, page does not exist. Try something else. So, I mean, I've got it as far as on this other.
Well, let me give you another one then. Let me give you another page that might take you to it. Here you go. I'll put this one in there.
I've got the Google. I've got Google. I think it's got a lot of information. It says leak Nashville shooter manifesto shows motivation. Leak the public.
I put another one in there so you can maybe go to it real quickly. I put another one in the link in the chat room. That might take it a bit quicker.
I'm not a Twitter person. That's probably why it's not coming up. Hold on.
Well, Twitter is where it was first revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went to that link, and I was able to see it.
Oh, act right. You know, when you have technology and just don't want to act right? Don't laugh.
it's still a great tool.
Yeah.
It is a great tool.
Yeah, you know
what?
It is. I mean, you just have to call out all the bad stuff.
Yes, you do. Okay, let's see what's right now. Nashville has.
And there's a lot of that, admittedly.
What's that?
There's a lot of bad stuff, too. But if you call that out, there's no better research tool around.
It's asking me to create a Twitter account. I'm not creating no Twitter account. I don't do Twitter.
Oh, okay. Well, you're not on Twitter then. Okay, I get it. Okay.
No, I got enough stuff out here to keep me paralyzed, as they would say.
Yeah, a lot of the other platforms are censoring it. They don't want you to see it.
No. Mm-mm. They'll take it off really quick. I'm sorry, your information is not allowed on our platform. Stupid stuff, you know.
Now, Elon Musk wanted it to be seen. That's why he allows it there.
No, I can't get into it. And we have another caller out there, another person. Did you call through Skype? Sarge?
What's that?
Did you call through Skype?
Yes, I called through Skype.
Okay. No, because I have a friend who wants to know how he can get in, because I guess, you know, when he calls in, it costs him. And so I don't know, how do you Skype? You have to go to Skype app or something like that?
Yeah, you got to apply to Skype. And, you know, they got one that's free, but it's limited calling. And if you pay a certain amount, you could have unlimited calls worldwide and, you know, statewide. But they do have a free application that you have to pay any money for. So it depends on which one you decide to select.
Okay, I'll have to let him know. Because I don't know if you heard the gentleman. His name was Chris Collins. He's the one who was talking about the small houses and everything. I don't know if you had listened to any of the shows that he was on that I was on, but I will definitely pass that information on to him.
because he wants to be, you know, wants to be able to be on the shows, but it's just expensive for him. So, okay, I'll see what we can do.
I'm all for people having options. If people want to have a small house, great. If that fits their lifestyle, mm-hmm. that's what they want to do. The problem is they want to put us all in these pill boxes. That's the problem.
Not everybody. I mean, he's trying to eliminate homelessness is what he's trying to do. You know, so somebody has a roof over their head, even though, you know, they may have gone through foreclosure or, you know, ousted out of the house due to a fire or what have you. But he's trying to put people in houses, on these kind of homes. They're beautiful. If you saw the houses, oh, my gosh, you just like, wow. You just like be so enamored.
Well, I had a lot of experience with intractable homelessness. I'm not talking about people who are down on their luck and need a helping hand for a transitory period. I'm talking about the intractably homeless people who refuse to go to shelters or anywhere else where they're going to be regulated. They simply don't want to go. That, for me, was my problem dealing with them as a police officer. And then most of the homeless people I came in contact with were what I call the intractable homeless, people with severe addictions or they were mentally ill.
Okay. They're just out there on the street.
And they didn't want to go anywhere else.
Because they don't know anything else.
And the only way to get them out anywhere else would be, they didn't want to be anywhere else. The only way to deal with it was to have them involuntarily admitted. And the only way you could get that criteria established to have that done was to have them declared a danger to themselves or others. Short of that, you couldn't make them get off the street.
Gotcha. And some people, they'll park their car down the street, get out and act like they're homeless, and then go back home and pay for their house. A nice house, too. That's that happened in Washington State. Sure did. This one man who used to park his car down around the corner from where he was panhandling, I guess you want to call it. And, but he was gathering money so he could pay his rent, which, hey, if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. Some people, you know, create ways to make ways. So, you know, that's just how that goes. We talking about, do you feel like you're enslaved to anything?
No, not particularly, no. The only thing I'm probably enslaved to is my attempt, however subjective it may be, to find out the truth of things. I guess I'm dedicated to epistemology, but people say, tell me, I can't be, because I'm very, I'm not objective. I mean, I have a definite viewpoint on what I try to believe. I evaluate things for their value, their intrinsic value, objectively, but in my outlook on life and my philosophy, I'm definitely biased. Make no doubt about it. But when it comes to evaluating evidence, because of my training as a police officer and my back, you know, I could evaluate things presented to me as evidence or proof of something for their value as evidence. I'm very good at doing that, and I can leave my subjectivity aside when I do that. But I make no mistake about it. I am not objective. I make no pretense of being, and I don't want to be.
Now, you're very direct, you know. You aren't a slave to
I'm going to make clear. I'm a Declaration of Independence, constitutional conservative, and I believe that, there is such a thing as objective transcendent truth, and I'm doing my very best to discover what that is. That's why I do not believe a man could be a woman merely by declaring himself to be so. I just don't. I never will.
Interesting. That was okay. So you don't feel like you're enslaved to anything. So you are a man who
not really.
Not really, he says. that you're not working, or I should say you're retired, I'll say. Oh, and so were you in the service as well, or just in the as a policeman?
I was in the United States Army. I like to make it clear what branch of service I was in, because people say they were in the military. That's kind of vague. You know, I mean, military. Were you in military school or what? What do you mean, military? What?
Mm-hmm.
But when you say you're in the United States Army, was very specific, or you're in at least the armed forces, then everybody knows what you're talking about.
Right, right.
But yeah. And then when I got out of the United States Army, I was in the National Guard, and I retired from the National Guard.
Okay.
I was 4 years on active duty, and another 18 in the National Guard.
Okay. No, because I was going to say thank you for your service on Veterans Day, what have you. So you're still here with us to tell the stories. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. I'm so glad there are lots of others like me to hear from, too, because I don't think there's any general duty imposed upon the citizenry that it carries with it the obligations and hardships of our service in the armed forces, particularly during a war, but even in peacetime.
Okay. Wow. I know my dad, he was in the service, and he went to Da Nang for about a year. You know, he made it back.
Yeah.
So thank goodness for that. And we had the old tape recorders, you know, which you had the reel-to-reel. And so I don't know how Dad recorded it, but we would hear the bombing going off in the background and what have you when Dad was over in the service. And my mom would just jump every time she would hear a bomb explode or whatever. And you don't know how close they are to your loved one or whatever. But, you know, nothing happened to Dad. So thank goodness and thank God nothing happened. And he came back home to us safe and sound. So I'm just grateful for that. I definitely am grateful for that. So, yes, sir.
Well, you know, I got to admit, you know, I think I've had a pretty good life, so I'm not complaining about anything. But I really like to think about guys I knew who didn't make it, didn't come back. And a couple of them who didn't come back, I wouldn't be here talking to you now if it wasn't for them. I tell my children almost every chance I get, you would not be here if it were not for them. And you ought to thank them every day you like being alive.
Okay.
You'll never know them, but I knew them, and I'm telling you, they were the best. They were my brothers.
Wow, okay. That's okay. That's okay. As long as you, and that's what a lot of people have garnered of those friendships as far as brothers and is concerned. So that's cool. Till death, and it just wasn't y'all's time to die at that point. So, wasn't your time to die.
But you know what really bothers me a lot, though, Ian, is, you know, okay, it's one thing.
What's that?
When your country tells you got to go and you got to be prepared to die, and in fact, you do die. But when they betray you deliberately, that is almost too much to bear. You know, I mean, I think of what they did to these poor guys in, you know, coming out of Afghanistan. Certainly what they did to, now that was the case in the Gulf War in 1991 where I got called up, my guard unit got called up for that one. That was a triumph, and it did accomplish the objective that it was stated out to do, that is repel Iraqi forces from Kuwait. It did that. So I wouldn't count that as one of them. Certainly not the Korean War. The Korean War saved South Korea, and look at South Korea today compared to North Korea. I mean, even though those guys died and most of them didn't want to be there, still they got their objective accomplished. They saved South Korea from the tyranny of what is now North Korea. Just look at the difference between the two countries, and that's all you need to know. But, you know, Vietnam and, you know, Afghanistan, and to a slightly lesser extent, Iraq, I mean, I think those men were just betrayed. Those people who died, the people, the men and the women, were betrayed deliberately by their own government's policies.
things.
Wow. Hell yeah. Oof, that's rough. By their own government. So a lot of these troops are, I can't say even in it to win it. You know, they go because they have to serve their country. And that was one of the things I've spoken about earlier. They're a slave because you either have to go or you go to jail. One of the two. So you're either a slave to the prison system or a slave to the war. Which one do you want to be a slave to? Am I not correct?
Well, I'm not gonna put a soldier in the category of a slave, because soldiers, there's a consensus among the people that soldiers are obligated to obey their legal orders from the superiors. I mean, otherwise,
right.
An army really can't function. You gotta have an army cannot function effectively without that.
Exactly, but what I'm saying is, if you had, like when the draft came up, if you didn't go, you went to jail because you didn't want to go to war, correct?
Or you didn't want to go into service, because not everybody went to
service.
War, even during the
draft. Right, right. In the service, okay. Didn't want to be in a certain service, armed forces, you know, Air Force, Marines, Navy, Coast Guard, any of those. So, but if you were to be drafted and you didn't want to go, you would be put in jail, correct? For dodging the draft.
Yeah, it certainly carried that potential. It's certainly illegal.
Okay.
So yeah, you have
okay.
the potential of going to jail and being prosecuted. But a lot of people
okay.
who decided to defy the draft did not get prosecuted even, much less go to jail. I don't think, relatively speaking, not that many people went to jail during the Vietnam War for refusal to report from abduction.
Okay.
I mean, relatively speaking,
okay.
not that many.
Relative.
The ones that did were the celebrated cases that, you know, everybody would hear about. You know, the ones who publicly burned their draft cards and made a show of leading demonstrations. They were the ones who were selected because they couldn't have prosecuted everybody that refused the doctrine. There were just too many for the court system.
Right. That's a lot. That sure is a lot. Well, will this group please come in so we can try you for dodging the draft? But,
Well, you know, the armed forces, even during World War II, they had conscientious objector status, and people did get out of the war. I mean, look at that guy, that Desmond Doss. I don't know if you know who Desmond Doss was, but he was awarded the Medal of Honor for his incredible heroism during World War II, and he was a conscientious objector, and he would not pick up a rifle and kill anyone. He just refused. But he did serve as a combat medic. And what he did was every bit as heroic as anyone who wielded weapons against the enemy. I mean, his story was just incredible. They made a movie out of it called Heartbreak Ridge.
That was
and
a good one.
Let's not forget the story of Alvin C. York in the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
Alvin York was a hellraiser and a thug, and I got religion. He became a religious man and a deacon. And then when he got his draft notice, he said, "Well, the Bible taught me that killing is against the Bible." And this commanding officer had to convince him why he ought to go serve in World War I, and gave him a leave to go home and think about it. And he prayed about it and thought about it and decided to come back and go.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an incredible story of his heroism in the Argonne Forest. So, yeah, conscious objectors have always been a part of the story, too.
That's rough. I'm just glad that somebody fought, because I think I probably would have been a sissy and said, "Nope, I'm not going. I'd rather serve jail time than to than to go over and fight for a cause that is like, do we really have to be in that war or any of those wars? Nope, not necessarily so.
Well, you got to figure it like this. If you do get called up to service, the ratio of the people who are at the tip of the spear, talking about the spearhead, is always astonishingly small compared to those who have to support them. In the United States Armed Forces, the ratio is roughly 9-1. For every one mm-hmm. person involved in direct combat with the enemy, in infantry, armor, or artillery, or other combat units, the rest of them are combat mm-hmm. support. So even though, you know, you might take a look at World War One, you say, well, okay, 404,000 men died in World War II on operations in the armed forces. But and out of a universe of 12.3 million people who served in the armed forces, that's not a very high percentage. But if you look at those who are at the sharp end, in the heavy mm-hmm. bomber crews, and the fighter pilots, and the submariners, and the men on the destroyers, and the naval ships, and particularly the infantry units in Northwest Europe in the last year of World War II, and tank mm-hmm. crews, they suffered a very high likelihood of being killed, wounded, or captured. So, I mean, it depends on where you are. You know, overall, mm-hmm. if you're in the office, you mm-hmm. got a good chance of surviving even a major conflict like World War II. But if you're at the sharp end, your odds definitely decrease one hell of a lot. Particularly if you're an infantryman or a heavy bomber crew.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
right.
You are literally a fugitive from the law of averages. Definitely. Did you know that some of those mm-hmm. infantry units in Northwest Europe had a casualty mm-hmm. rate of anywhere from 100% to 500%? Some of them?
Wow. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. I mean, you're laying some information on me. 500%.
That means the entire structure of the unit would be rebuilt mm-hmm. five times over in an 8-month period.
Wow. Okay. Do you know how many casualties of war there were during that time?
During what time?
During the wartime. During the Vietnam War.
Oh, it depends on what war, during Vietnam, you have 58,000 mm-hmm. during the course
okay.
of the war.
In World War II.
If you're talking about the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
World War II, 404,000 dead. Of course, that doesn't count wounded and missing. Well, the KIA also includes missing now. They chalked them up to killed in action. They just couldn't find enough of them to determine whether or not they were dead. Or they were missing. They're still finding some of them today in aircraft that were shot down and ships that were sunk. Some unmarked grave in a place like the Hurricane Forest or the Philippines or the Solomon somewhere. But you know, they're finding them. And they'll be finding them for, I don't know, decades, centuries maybe.
That's a lot.
They're finding tens of thousands every year on the Russian front in World War II. Mm-hmm. They're finding skeletons still all over the place in Russia. 4.5 million German soldiers were killed in Russia, and 11 million or 12 million Russian soldiers were killed on the Eastern Front. And they're still finding the ones that are missing. Something like 900,000 of them are still missing. They're still finding them. They find dozens of them every week.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. They try to repatriate the remains and send them back to the graves registration, maybe Germany or Russia or whatever. And they see, every now and then you see them having a ceremony where, you know, they're putting their remains in a military ceremony, contacting their family or their descendants. That they found their relatives.
Mm-hmm. Right, if there's any left or around or anything, so that's good. Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-mm-mm.
It was about a Tuskegee Airman not too long ago. A Tuskegee Airman went missing after his aircraft was hit by flak and he had he crash landed somewhere in Yugoslavia, and they just found his remains a couple of years ago and sent him back home. And his daughter was still alive, so, you know, she was notified finally the final fate of her father after all those years.
And I think I saw that in the paper or either on the Today Show, one of the two. I did hear about that one just recently. Because I don't think there's that many leftists. He wasn't like the last one. I want to say he's getting close to the
You mean the last one that they found? You mean the last one missing that they found?
No,
I
the last
still
one
a few,
that's alive.
Oh, no, there's only a few that are alive, yeah. But this man died in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
But they just found his remains to send back home.
In somebody's
house. But he died in
1944. Oh, wow. Interesting. Wow. Okay. Found. I mean, how do you find these remains just out there in, you know, after what you said it was in 40-something, so this is 2023. How many years ago
23?
Was that?
Well, that's like 78, 79 years ago. So here's what they do. The United States Army, I tell you, what I think one of the greatest things about the United States Armed Forces is that it maintains a dedicated unit just that serves just the purpose of recovering our dead that are missing from battlefields around the world. That's all they do.
Wow.
Their sole job is to find the remains of killed personnel, bring them back to Hawaii. They have an identification lab in Hawaii and attempt to identify the remains and notify the families and or the descendants of the deceased. And that's all they do. And they go around the world recovering these dead GIs wherever they can find them. Because there's a lot of them still out. I think there's still something like 60,000 men that are missing. And they haven't found their remains from World War II. There's hundreds from the Korean War. A few thousand from the Korean War. They haven't found all of them yet. So, but that's what they do. They go around searching for these men. They find particularly a lot of air crew in the Vietnam War who were shot down. Mm-hmm. They never recovered their remains. They're finding them.
So that's one
thing I do appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's what I appreciate about our armed forces. They never stop trying to recover our dead and give them proper burial and recognition. That is a trait that not that many other armies in the world have as an important part of their mission.
Uh-huh. So if an airplane goes down or whatever, and they just, how do they find these things? That's what I want to know after all these years.
You know, they got lists of the missing, and of course every unit has to file a report when a person is either killed, wounded, or missing. They got the unit records, and sometimes they get tips from people who live in the area. They find fragments of, a wrecked aircraft, or they might have come across a rifle that was buried in the ground, and the rifle's got a serial number on it, and they think the serial number was issued to this missing soldier, and they say, well, maybe his body's in the vicinity. They just found a couple in the Hurtgen Forest, which was a grueling battle during November of 1944. It was a prelude to the Battle of the Bulge, and the Germans actually defeated the army. They inflicted horrific casualties on the army, and the army got nowhere in the Hurtgen. And a lot of GIs went missing that were killed. And they were in foxholes. They got blown over, and they got buried.
Right.
Or they got under a lot of debris, and over the years, more sediment piled on top of them. So they were just missing, and nobody found them. But then something will come to light that will cause somebody to notify authorities, and the authorities will notify the Defense Department. The Defense Department notifies this unit, and they'll go back there and start looking for them. And oftentimes they find them.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
So, Say that part again.
Maybe we need to have a show on finding the missing.
Yeah.
Are you still looking for me?
Yeah, I think it's good. On the band, I mean, I think that's something reverential about that. And, you know, especially prone to happen, like, with aircraft crews. They're the ones who are really likely to get lost somewhere and nobody can find them. You know, they go down in some jungle in New Guinea or the Solomon Islands or somewhere like that. You got all the jungle growth that grows over, and you'll never find them unless you know where to go to look for them.
And that's what I was just wondering, if they, planes go down in jungles and water or deserted areas, and you think they would be looking for them at that point, but then again, you never know what.
No, they do. They often send out search parties, but in the chaos of war and all the confusion and everything, oftentimes it's just hard to find them. And then they can't keep the search going forever. After a certain period of time, they call the search off. And they did find them. And you got to remember, too, you got an aircraft, and say an aircraft is hit and it goes in a dive, a power dive, and it's doing 350, 400 miles an hour and hits the ground. It literally goes into the ground, into it. And then it's easy for Mother Nature to cover it up. I saw one story about this this German fighter pilot who got shot down, and his plane out from underneath 15 feet of soil that had compacted over it. It went into the ground, and they picked up his remains, and they identified him by this. He had his dog. He had his identification tags, and he had a particular ring with a family crest on it that had been issued, given to him by his family, and that's how they were able to identify him. Plus, they had the serial number of the aircraft. From the aircraft, they determined the serial number. They could check the records in Germany, who was the pilot that was flying that plane when it was reported missing, and all this stuff. But the point is, it went into the ground, and it got covered up over the years.
And see, that's because you see movies and what have you, and things that planes go down, and then killed in action, missing in action, and okay. If you know where they went down, and then they stopped the search. That's but luckily some things happen and nature takes its course.
Yeah, just think of it. If they're going to like marshy or soft ground. Or like in Holland, a lot of bombers got shot down over Holland. And terrain over there in Holland, they go into like the polders, they call it polder. And it's really soft and marshy. And the aircraft are like sinking marshy soil. And they find whole bombers down there with, those bombers had 8 or 9, 10-man crews. And they'll find their remains in the aircraft buried underneath the, under the ground.
Just like the find that they just did with the, I don't know if it was conquistadors or whatever, they all that millions of coins and what have you. And they're trying to figure out who does it belong to.
Who does it belong to? Well, I'll tell you one thing. If it's like on the high seas and it's like one of those treasure ships, the Spanish government will say it's ours.
Okay.
And you're supposed to make, under Spanish law, they'll make a claim for it through the international court if somebody else retrieves it and salvages it. So it all depends.
But the thing is,
they might let them have a finder's fee, but that'd be about it.
Yeah, but a lot of times it doesn't even really belong to the Spanish people because they stole it from somebody else.
That's what they have courts for, to try to untangle all that. Well, that's why they have courts to try to untangle it all,
Right.
It's a tangled web when it gets to that point.
And that's what I'm saying go ahead.
But when you look at all the wars that Spain was involved in back then, they acquired booty from all kinds of places, including other European powers. Mm-hmm. Especially in the wars on the high seas, where, you know, you had privateers working, and the privateers would seize ships, and they take the stuff off and declare it as a war trophy, and they might get sunk
right.
before they got back to port, and that stuff is at the bottom, and who knows who's entitled to it, and they got to sort it all out.
Right. And that's what I'm talking about. Who claims what who does it actually belong to? I mean,
what's going on in the Middle East. Look what's going on in the Middle East. And look how relatively recent Israel became a new nation. That was just in 1948. Mm-hmm. And look at what's going on with that. I mean, you've got all kinds of documentation as to how the state of Israel came into being. Not like it was just through conquest, because it wasn't just through conquest that the state of Israel came into being. I mean, it started with the British conquering that region of the world, but Israel was voted into being by both the League of Nations and the United Nations. And most every country in the world that had a seat on the United Nations at the time voted for the two-state solution to create a nation of Palestine and a nation of Israel. Almost every nation in the world voted for that at the time.
And then what happened?
That was on the at least that was on the United Nations or in a member of the United Nations.
And so it was turned down so that they don't have their own separate states. Is that what part of the issue?
Well, why didn't it happen? Because the Arabs rejected it. That's why it didn't happen. They rejected it. They said, we're not going to tolerate a Jewish state in our midst. They just flat out rejected. And they told the Palestinians, they ordered the Palestinians to leave that area of the land that had been mandated the nation of Israel. They told them, we're going to drive these Jews into the sea, and then you can come back and take this stuff. That's what they told them. Get out. Don't be in our way when our Arab armies come in to destroy the state of Israel. Four Arab armies.
Okay.
That's why there's not a nation of Palestine now. The Arabs flat out rejected it.
Okay. Wow.
I mean, you should see the contemporaneous writings and speeches of the Arab leaders of the time. They demanded that the Palestinians leave, and the Israelis were beseeching the Palestinian citizens to stay. They don't leave. Stay with us to work together to build our new nation. And most of them said, nope, we're getting out of town.
I'm leaving Dodge, huh?
We don't want to be here when you get wiped out.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, you had to look at all the things that they were said at the time. I mean, it's astonishing. All the things they were saying about begging their Arab citizens not to leave. You're part of the nation. Stay with us and help us build it up.
Right.
Now, I'm not trying to say that the Israelis were utopians, because they did some bad things, too. But when you compare the way their conciliatory attitudes, the conciliatory attitudes are almost 100% on the side of Israel. The Arabs were just utterly hostile to an Israeli nation on the Mediterranean Sea. They just weren't having it.
You could talk about war and stuff like that all night long, huh?
Well, in this case, because it's so significant to what's going on in the world right now. This has the potential for World War III.
Oh, World War III is already happening. It's almost...
Well, wait a minute, but look,
if
they're determined to have World War III, I guess it's just going to have to happen. But for God's sake, please don't let it happen on the basis of historical misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm. That's it right there. It's a misunderstanding.
Because you got to remember, this is just the facts, Sister Inez. 80% mm-hmm. of what was the historic land of Palestine and the Jewish mm-hmm. national home, as the League of Nations defined it between World War One and World War Two, was severed by the British, who had the mandate because they defeated the Ottoman Empire that had been in charge of it for over 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was severed by the British in 1921, and it was allocated to what became Transjordan. They forbade Jewish settlement there. The UN partitioned the remaining 20% of Palestine into two states. And when Transjordan annexed the West Bank in 1950 and the Egypt occupied Gaza, Arabs controlled more than 80% of that territory. That was the mandate. And the Jewish part of it was 17.5% by land mass. So when people say these things just aren't true. They didn't come in and just kick all the Palestinians off their land. It wasn't like the United States and the manifest destiny or anything like that.
They just didn't want to listen to each other. Well, it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, it's like, can't we just get along? God put us on this earth. We just need to get along on this earth. We don't want to do that. It's too much like right.
I don't think we can expect that. I mean, I know what we should do. We're just not going to do it because it just don't happen that way. And by the way, when it comes to nations, I know you've heard of a nation called Prussia, haven't you?
Prussia, yes, I have.
The country that Frederick the Great. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Frederick the Great ruled over it. It was Prussia was the most powerful of the Germanic mm-hmm. states. It was the leading Germanic state. Now remember, Germany did not become one nation until the mid-19th century with Bismarck. Bismarck managed to weld all these separate German states like Saxony and Bavaria and Prussia and Thuringia and all these other principalities that were Germanic into one nation. That was about 1851 or 1857, I forget which.
Uh-huh.
And that's when Germany became one nation. The most powerful of the German states was Prussia. It was the most powerful of them. Prussia doesn't exist anymore. It's part of Poland.
I know.
It's part of Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it part of Poland?
Mm-hmm.
Because of a war, the Second World War. And so now what used to be Prussia is Galicia, Poland. They call it Galicia. It's in Poland. That's what happens in war. It changes everything.
Everything.
Prussia ain't German no more. It's Polish. And that's part of the world today is Israel, because Israelis, mm-hmm. after, you know, trying everything they could to have a nonviolent solution with their Arab neighbors, they said the only way we're going to keep it is if we can fight for it and hold it. And that's what they did.
I don't think I've heard of Prussia since probably high school in the 70s. That's what it seems like. That's the only time I heard of Prussia.
It was the most powerful of the German states, and it does not
mm-hmm.
exist as a German state anymore. And the reason I say that is because it's a European country. People
mm-hmm.
act like the only thing this happens to is like third world. No, it happens everywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. It says it was banished first by Hitler, who abolished all German states, and then by the Allies, who singled out Prussia for oblivion as Germany was being reconstituted under their occupation. No doubt they thought that by eliminating Prussia, they would hit at every heart of German materialism.
Yeah, Marco, they thought that Prussia was a heart of German militarism.
Hmm.
You know, because the German high command and some of the more important military schools like Zaffen were in Prussia. And they thought by destroying Prussia and also giving it back to the Poles, because it was contested and it was right there on the border with Poland, they said, well, we've eliminated the threat of Prussian and Germanic militarism, because that's where it was centered.
Hmm.
Wow. Ha, ha, ha. But it's just, wow. You got so much history, it's not even funny. You either realize.
Yeah, I think it's the most fascinating subject there is.
It is.
The most fascinating subject there is, because if you think about it, the history is the story of how everything came to be. What's more interesting than that?
I mean, history is somewhat of what keeps us alive. And hold on a second.
I think it gives us context. You know, gives us a context for understanding where we are today. That's what I think's best about, the most important thing about history.
Okay. Hold on a second. I'm going to join Joe into the line because he's trying to get in, but he's having issues. So hold on a second.
Uh-oh. I don't want to be around when Joe gets on here when he says he's got issues. He can't get in. Oh, Lord, I'm in.
Why not? Him and Blog Talk, huh? He's having connection problems. And he'll be all right. I'll just keep him on mute. He'll be okay because I'll just hang up on him if he acts. If he, let me see if I can do this.
Don't worry, he'll be all right. Once he gets on, he'll have a brief outburst and then he'll get to the point.
Okay, he didn't even answer his phone, so I may try. I may text him and see if he still wants me to call him. But he says he's having problems connecting to the network. If you manage to get this text, please call. And if you can, think you'll help me get to participate in the show. Heck no. Because sometimes he may even just fall asleep. I called you. Sarge and I are online. Okay.
Well, see, I told you he was going to be peeved, didn't I?
Well, he's not peeved. He just, you know, it's just, he says, if you think that will help to get me into the participate on the show, okay. Okay, because I was wondering why he didn't show up earlier, because he shows up usually about after the song is over. it's like, okay, so I didn't know if he was having issues, but a lot of times he does have issues with his phone, his network, or his app. A lot of times he has issues with his app. I don't know why he just doesn't go into the chat room. I guess he can't talk as well with the chat room as if that's funny. But, no, it's just, if he doesn't come on, that's fine. But I know how he loves to come on, so he likes to be heard. And there was somebody else supposed to be coming onto the show. My phone didn't pick up, so hold on just a second. Let me see. Nope, let me see if I can get him another way. Hold on. Invite. Let's see if I can call this way. Maybe. I'm going to call him from the, actually from the line on the system, maybe. 3, 2. Are you there, Sarge? Sarge. Sarge, are you there?
Yeah, yes, ma'am. I had myself muted. I had to unmute myself. So, yeah, what was the question?
Okay, you're fine. No, I was just wondering if you were still there because I'm trying to call him and I don't know. I'm dialing him, but I guess his phone is probably acting up. So, we tried. I tried, but it's just not working.
Well, how about you? He'll be back.
He'll be back tomorrow or whatever day it is, Thursday.
That's right.
You know, Joe.
That's correct.
So have you talked to Solution at all?
Not lately. I wonder where he's been. I haven't heard from him in a while.
I mean, it's been months since he may be the other person in Skype. I don't know. Because, you know, you can't tell who's in Skype unless they say something. And this person doesn't say too much. So that could be him.
Well, I'm sure he listens. Because I know he has a lot to say about the state of things today, especially with regard to men and women and relationships between men and women.
Well, you know, that was probably Solution. Is that you out there? I think that's where I'm gonna say we had a fallout, but he had a confrontation between a couple of the other people, and so it's like okay. Then they stopped calling, and they started calling back in. So I don't know.
Well, you know this issue with issue number one in Ohio, and this other resolution, all these things that are being impelled by abortion. And let's face it, who is impelling these issues? It is young, single women who are not married and are not likely to get married anytime soon. And there's never been more than there is now.
Mm.
No, I know so. I know they're the ones that are impelling this issue. I have no doubt of it. There's never been more single, unmarried women, never been married women, and women who are unlikely to get married, who are adamant upon preserving the right to destroy their infants at will. It never has been. And that explains a lot of this.
Mm.
But fortunately,
and
that's
so
not true in every state. I mean, it's not true in Alabama. It's not true in Georgia, because we have states that severely restricted abortion, if not ending it. So it depends on what state you're living in. And remember, the Supreme Court did this so the states could decide it for themselves. As it should be.
And you would think that that's what it would be. I mean, because to each his own, as they say. And every state should have the right, the wrong, whatever, to decide. But women... they keep on saying, how are you going to have a right over my body as far as what I do with my body?
But on the surface of it, that is a specious argument. It isn't their body. How can a male body in a woman's body with a separate DNA structure be their body? How is that possible?
Say it again. How can a male body and a what now?
Someone else. Yeah, I get a male body, a male baby, inside of a woman's womb, be part of her body. It's in her body, but it isn't part of it. It's a whole separate DNA structure and sex.
So that's how you view this? I'm just asking.
No, I'm just saying it's a specious argument. Now, if she wants to argue that she has the right to end that life in her womb, please don't make the argument that I want to decide what's right for my body, because you're deciding what's wrong for another person's body.
Hmm.
I'll at least be more coherent and more logical to me, even if I still think it's somewhat evil.
Okay.
How can a male body be a woman's body? Or even
because
a girl, how can a girl's body, well, how can a girl's body be her body when it has a separate DNA structure from the mother?
It has a separate DNA structure from the mother, but still it's part of the mother and the father's, what do you want to call it, compilation. So it's still of her body.
That's why I'm saying it's not her body. That is exactly the reason why it's not her body.
So, okay.
She's not deciding what to do with her body. She's deciding what to do with someone else's body.
We may have to talk about
this. It's patently obvious to me.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just saying it's patently obvious to me.
I heard you. But what I'm saying is, so it's created by her, but it's still not of her. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's patently not her. Now, admittedly, it is occupying a space in her body, just like, I don't know, a trespasser would be. If a trespasser was in your house, they may not necessarily belong there. You're occupying a space in your house, but most jurisdictions won't allow you to kill a trespasser in your house unless you're directly threatening their life.
Hmm.
I don't see how a normal pregnancy, absent a threat to the life or health of a mother, which, by the way, is a therapeutic abortion, a cause for a therapeutic abortion, and I support a mother's right to choose that, because I can't force anyone to give their life for someone else. I don't think anybody should. That should be a choice for the mother. But I'm talking about a normal pregnancy that is proceeding normally does not pose a threat of death or physical harm to the mother. I mean, aren't the feminists constantly telling us that pregnancy is not a disease and a woman ought to be able to work as long as she wants to when she's pregnant?
They say that, correct.
Okay, I go along with that. And it certainly is, you clearly can't say, our reasons for justifying the taking of human life, all of us pretty much agree here are the exceptions. One, when that person poses a deadly physical threat to you or someone else. Number two, in lawful conduct of war. Number three, because of a lawful execution. Absent that, you're not supposed to kill anybody.
Hmm.
Now, if you're going to say a child in a womb is not human, and it's not really a human being or human life, then I'd like to know at what point in your spectrum of your life, from your conception until your natural death, is it okay to kill you? Just tell me. If you say the first 9 months of your life, okay, that's a position, but I don't agree.
Mm-hmm.
There will no doubt when it begins, when you're conceived. Union of sperm and egg. At that moment, your physical being begins to exist.
Okay. So if they find something else wrong with the baby, do you want them to still continue with her going through the pregnancy, or would they term the baby?
I don't want to go down a slippery slope of assigning a lesser value of life to any human being. I just don't. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it for rape. I'm not going to do it for incest. I'm not going to do it for anything. All human life has the same intrinsic value. I notice the word I use. I use intrinsic value. All of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to say one form of human life is lesser than another. I'm just not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why people would want to do it, but I think that should be forbidden.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I might want to do a lot of things that are wrong, but I think in most cases, no matter what my personal feelings are, I ought to be forbidden from doing them by law.
Okay. Nothing's wrong with that.
I mean, I like to ask anybody out there. Well, I like to ask anybody out there at what you know, everybody out there was at the point of existence where these children are being aborted. There's not one of us that wasn't at that point sometime in our existence. They never seem to consider that. They're like this because they're out of the womb and they're walking around talking. There are exceptions to it or something. It only applies to those things in the womb that are inconvenient.
And
every one of us was there.
That person. Oh yeah.
Somebody
was where.
Otherwise, why would you want to get rid of it? Why would you want to get rid of your genetic legacy? What other reason is to get rid of your genetic legacy? And think about it. Our progeny, our posterity, are our genetic immortality. When we have children, that bit of our genetics survives into succeeding generations. Why would you want to destroy your chance at genetic immortality? I mean, that's one of the main reasons of being alive, if you think about it. Maybe not the only one, but certainly one of them.
It's one of them.
Like the Bible says, I don't know that many phrases in the Bible, but I know the Bible says be fruitful and multiply, and there's a reason for it.
Right. Yeah. It says that. It does say that. It doesn't say how to, you know, or the acts of, you know, abortions or anything like that either. I mean, everybody has to, what do you want to say? It's not right to abort, but everybody has to have their, what do you want to say? Everybody will be judged in the end. So, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, but
know,
in the meantime, though,
it
is the obligation. Yeah, but in the meantime, it's the obligation of civilization to make laws that, at the very least, do everything possible to protect innocent human life. And you can't be any more innocent than a baby in a womb. It's not possible.
So if laws don't
protect innocent human life, what good is it to have any law at all? And we protect murderers, for God's sake. I'm not saying we shouldn't. We should protect murderers from the attempt of the mob to lynch them and from the attempts of prison guards to abuse them. Of course we need to have laws to protect them. But if we have laws to protect people like that, why in God's name don't we have laws to protect innocent life in the womb?
And there are. I mean, they're just fighting. Everybody's fighting the law. Or fighting the
right. Let's think of what some states have adopted. California is all to the point of birth and even slightly beyond. That is simply inhuman. So it depends on what state you're in.
And each state, you know, has their laws. According to a lot of things. I mean, the voting law, they want to try to get rid of us from voting. Is that not correct?
No, they're not trying to do that. In fact, the Voting Rights Act is not in peril. The Supreme Court simply says that when you put a jurisdiction under supervision under the Voting Rights Law, that every so often that must be reviewed to determine whether or not the jurisdiction is now in compliance. And if they are in compliance with the Voting Rights Act, you end the mandated period of supervision. That only makes sense. jurisdictions are not intended to be under the control of the federal government beyond what is necessary for that control.
Hmm.
I mean, they had the state of Mississippi under this supervision, under the Voting Rights Act. Mississippi has more elected officials than black officials in any state in the union now. It's no longer relevant. There's no need to keep them under the supervision. They have corrected whatever it was they were supposed to correct. But you know why a lot of people want to keep some of these states under this kind of supervision? Because the more control they have from the federal government over states, the better. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of control for a lot of these people who say, oh, they're going to take away the voting rights. No, that's not at all what's happening with this. It's just simply that they have a period of review to determine whether or not the affected jurisdictions are now in compliance with the Voting Rights Act. And if they are, the federal supervision should be ended. Some people distort things into untruths.
They do. I mean, everybody, you know, what he wants to call them, use the same words in different ways.
That's called sophistry. And sophistry is something we're supposed to try to avoid.
Okay.
Yeah, sophistry is something we're not supposed to allow to go unchallenged.
Don't some things need to be challenged?
Of course they are. I think you need to challenge everything in life every day, especially premises. I mean, even premises that I'm comfortable with, I don't mind having a challenge. I mean, it sharpens my – it either causes me to change my mind if someone makes a really good argument, or it strengthens my own. I think having your viewpoints and ideas challenged is a good thing.
So, okay. Because I'm just bringing up voting rights. Oops, I don't want to do that. Of course, I don't want to. Joe? I'm not Joe, but Eddie?
What's up, Doc?
Hey, how you doing?
And
Sarge is on the line. Good.
Where's Joe? Joe's here too?
He's trying to get on, but he's having issues. I even tried
to
call
Joe.
Him.
Feed the squirrels. You need more power. Feed the squirrels.
I even tried to call him, and I don't know what happened.
Merge
so
him.
Then he came on. Huh?
Oh, he tried to merge him. You know, three-way him in.
I tried to three-way him in, and I tried to call him even from Blog Talk Radio. And he called in, and I opened up his line, but he didn't say anything. Let me see. I'm texting to see if he still wants to come on. You want to talk to him?
Nah, well, yeah, I just want to let him know about something that happened on another platform. Let him know that he need to go to the archive and listen to the rest of that show so he can get clarity on and it was really a misunderstanding. Somebody thought they heard something that he didn't say.
Okay.
Yeah, but what's this with this slave word? That's what I called in for. And, you know, I got a bone to pick with you.
Why?
Indigenous people are prisoners of war. It might not necessarily be about this landmass, Turtle Island, the Americas, but I saw that word. I said, wait a minute. I had so much to do with it. I'm wondering if Spirit wanted me even to call in because, you know, I've been busy up to this point.
And it's not so much as just us being slaves, as Sarge and I had been talking about earlier,
but it's just being slaves to other things in our life, you know, drugs, sex, alcohol, you know, our own self, that type of thing, you know, not as the slave act of 1802 or something like that. So that's, are we enslaved in our own being? Do we need to free ourselves? Do we need to free our minds from some of the things that we do? That type of thing. Not the slave, like, you know, we being chained up and everything, but we still are being chained up in a way that some of us cannot break free from some of our...
You know what the difference
is? What's that?
The difference between us and European people or Caucasians or white people, whatever you want to classify, is when they have something on their mind to do, be it because of cultural mindset or being spoiled and privileged here in the Americas, is that they decide to do something, they're going to do it. You introduce them to a good opportunity, they do their little due diligence and research, and they do it. Us, we always think about why not, who's going to try and stop us. The biggest devil that's in a melanated person's life is inside of their clothes. It's them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's enough information out there on the airwaves. There's enough books, autobiographies and everything, how people did what they did to become successful to their own desired end result. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, just like what you're saying, yeah, we are slaves of our own self. Everybody is, but most other nationalities take much better care of themselves than, you know, we do. Now, I'm not discounting the fact that we were basically the last prisoners. I'm not going to call us slaves because we weren't slaves. If somebody infiltrates your land and puts your ass in bondage, you're a prisoner of war. You are not a slave. Okay?
Okay. So,
I love Africa. I love African people, but I'm not African. I am American. I'm from Turtle Island. I'm from Mulan, which is here. This landmass rose first. You could check it. You can go to Google and put in, where was the oldest water on the planet found? It will be Canada. Canada is a corporation, just like the United States is a corporation, just like South America is a corporation. All this land here is one landmass. Everybody talks about the barrens. Never mind, I'm going too far again. Anyway.
No, go ahead. Sarge, do you have anything you want to say? He's on mute, so he's...
Also, I got to unmute myself every time you ask me a question. That's why I might take a little bit of time to hit the unmute button. I want to make sure I don't...
That's okay.
I was just listening to the conversation. I want to hear the gentleman's premise completely before I comment on it, but I find it interesting, and I'd like to hear him play it out.
Go ahead, Eddie.
A lot of things that, again, we were put into derision, prisoners of war. Khalid Muhammad basically spoke in code on the Phil Donahue show. I think that was in the 80s. And the analogy that he gave is, somebody comes to your house, kicks your door in, black boot stomps the man in the house and say, all of this is mine. Who does it really belong to? Some people talk about the Moors and the treaties. You know, who you think navigated Cristobal Colombo over here, not Christopher Columbus. If you Google his name, it'll tell you exactly who he was. And he also was a mulatto. He was Ubered over here, since Uber is famous means of transportation where you're driven
right
to your location. So he was Ubered here. Okay. So all I'm emphasizing on is, unfortunately and fortunately, we were the last people who were put into derision. They took the children away from the parents so the parents couldn't inform the children. All it takes is two or three generations. You could take an American child, drop them in any other country on the planet, regardless of the nationality of that child. I'm just using America because that's where we reside. That's where we are. If they're raised by people in another land that speaks another language, that child might acknowledge the difference in them. Innately, there'll be certain things that that child might desire and require as he gets older. But the reality is that child will be of that culture. And if he doesn't awaken to who innately he is, he will always be part of that culture, no matter if he's the only one there. It's like the story of Tarzan. They put so many things in front of us metaphorically. We don't ask enough questions because we've been basically told what to do. We're told how to read the Bible. We're told what kind of food is good. There's food that's created and produced here on this landmass by way of the United States Corporation it's not even allowed in Europe. I think it's a iPhone 10 or 9. That phone's not allowed in Europe, but it sells here like hotcakes. Most American people don't know if they don't have in Europe. They won't allow that phone there because it's dangerous.
Dangerous
just
how?
So many things. Radiation. Maybe even spy technology. I don't even know. I don't care. I don't like iPhones, but I don't care. They got the all-seeing eye with the dollar bill symbolizing Illuminati, symbolizing secret societies. I don't play with none of that stuff. None of it. I got Masons all through my family. You think I joined? No. Why? I ain't about that. Rituals and all that foolishness? No, I don't do that. I keep my life real simple. I'm trying to grow some apple trees right now, even though it's winter, but I'm just saying I'm ready to go next harvest. But it's just that simple. And, you know, I'll yield there so I could hear what your guest has to say.
Sarge.
Yeah, I found very interesting John's remark about Cristoforo Colombo, because he was a gentleman who undertook a commission from Spain to undertake his expedition. So what he did as a gentleman, which is one of the Italian city-states, was he undertook his expedition on behalf of the nation of Spain, not the nation of Italy, which kind of goes to the gentleman's point, even though he wasn't raised in the Spanish culture or the Spanish nation. He did what he did as an agent of Spain. And I guess that's really the important thing here. Race may be immutable because it's a matter of genetics, but nationality, ethnicity, and citizenship is not. It is malleable depending upon the area or the location in which you are reared, raised, and that you adopt. You take an individual like Arminius, who led the Germanic revolt against the Romans, particularly winning the Battle of Teutoburg Forest, which altered European history forever, probably, because it stopped the expansion of the Roman Empire beyond the Rhine River. Who knows how history would have been altered had that battle not occurred. Now, he was raised as a Roman. He was raised to think of himself as Roman. He was taken as a hostage and given to as a hostage to the Russians, the Germans, in order to share their compatibility and conciliation to their Roman conquerors. But even though he imbibed the culture of the Romans and thought of himself as a Roman for a long time, when he went back amongst his people, he then decided to readopt and reacquaint himself with his Germanic roots and led a revolt against Rome. But that doesn't always happen that way. Most people who are raised in a particular culture tend to adopt it and consider themselves completely part and parcel of it. So, you know, when it comes to these things, especially since we're talking about all this mess going on in the land of formerly the Levant, that was the province of the Ottoman Empire for hundreds of years, and which was taken from them by the British in 1917, we got to remember these things. The immutability of citizenship and people who migrated to the Middle East from Europe and elsewhere around the world during the first, second, and third Aliyahs, and eventually came to form the nation of Israel. All of these factors come into play, and we forget them at our own peril. It leads to misunderstanding and conflict infinitely worse than it has to be. And we're witnessing it right now playing out in the Middle East.
Okay.
When was the land of Israel incorporated?
You mean in the modern day sense?
Yeah, when did the Ashkenazis
move? In the modern
day sense? Yes, when did the Ashkenazis move to Israel?
Well, they were always a presence in the region, particularly starting in the Ottoman Empire, because my understanding is from my study of the Ottoman Empire after Constantinople fell and became Istanbul, according to the census records of the Ottomans at the time, Jews made up 20% of the Ottoman Empire. Now, most of them were not from Europe, but some of them were. They were mostly Sephardic Jews and Armenian Jews and people like that. But the first wave of Jews from Europe, like the Ashkenazis and the Orthodox Jews, was in the latter part of the 18th century, in the first Aliyah, when the Zionists started to come into the Levant region at the behest of the Ottoman Empire, provided they paid the taxes that were afforded to the jizya tax that non-believers had to pay to the empire. So they were actually kind of invited into the region to help develop places of it that were sparsely populated. They certainly weren't populated by anybody at the time because they were unproductive areas. The Zionists came there and quite literally made the desert boom, and as a result, Arab Palestinians flocked to the region looking for opportunities, jobs, improved health care, and lowered infant mortality rates. And that's why their populations burgeoned in the area.
You're trying to tell me that the Palestinians migrated to that land called Palestine because of what the Ashkenazis was doing on that land that used to belong to Kemet, which is Egypt? That's what you're saying?
Yes, large numbers of them, that is. They are always there. Don't misunderstand me. Palestinian Arabs were a continuous presence in the region, as were Jews that go back 3,700 years. The Jewish presence in Palestine goes back at least 3,700 years. There were certainly probably more people of Arab, or what is now Arab origin, but they were, both of them were there continuously for all of that time. But I'm saying they were sparsely populated in those regions that the Zionists settled. They flocked in large numbers when those settlers began to make those areas productive. Arab commentators at the time commented upon it greatly in 1905. I'm looking right now at statements made by Arab commentators who noticed how the population was increasing because of what the Israeli, well, not Israeli, but the Zionist settlers were doing. It's really startling to read what they wrote. I was surprised to find it, but they wrote it.
You know, at one time, they were deciding if they were going to move into South Africa.
Uganda.
Or over there on the other side of Palestine, which is basically Palestine. Just like what you're speaking to. If you go to a map and you look at how much land the Palestinians had up to 1947, I believe. See, only thing I'm emphasizing on in reference to that, and I really don't care because the Arabs need to deal with them Ashkenazis over there. That's what they need to do. And America need to mind their own business. Just like what Muhammad Ali said, that ain't our fight. And that's the way I feel. No, I've never been in the military either. But still, they are not an agape-loving God's chosen people. And I don't really want to go into that part of the conversation. My foundation of what I was speaking to is This land, man. The Moors were ran out of Spain 1492. When Cristobal Colombo come over, just like what you said. And he was a mulatto. And those ships did have insurance on it. So I'm just emphasizing on the fact that is the individual who's usually in the chat, is he on tonight?
Who? Be Wise and Serpent?
Yeah.
Be Wise? No, he's not there. Mm-mm.
Well, Sister Inez, I want to make it clear if I haven't made it.
I just want to utter one more thing, please. You need to revisit the show in this conversation when those individuals are on, and I could bring on some individuals, and he could bring on individuals. But there's so much information that really demonstrates. There's a guy in Costa Rica called Caremio, and he speaks on these same things. Who the original people here, how long they were here. He talks about the pyramids that are here. The pyramids on this landmass are older than the ones in Africa. Yeah, there were giants here also, but overall, there were even buildings and structures here. A lot of these structures that are made out of stone are basically older than any European or any Caucasian footprint on this landmass. No disrespect to no Caucasians or what's classified as white people. I just choose not to use that word because that word really symbolizes just like what it stands for. Ancient and original. We are the true white people. We aren't black. The only time black is a positive word is when you're making money. Other than that, you got the black code. Name everything that's black. You got angel food cake that's white, but you got devil food cake, which is what? Chocolate. You know, see, we don't ponder certain things. And I'm not creating none of this verbiage that I'm speaking. But we're comfortable, and that's another reason why we're at the bottom of the food chain. Study and show thyself approved, says in the Bible. Well, not about the
I want to make it clear, though. Well, I want to make it absolutely clear that I'm a natural-born citizen of the United States of America. My first and primary concern is what is best for the United States and citizens. I'm not as concerned with what happens to Israel or the Palestinians in Gaza. I wish the best for both of them, but my primary concern is with the United States. Now, having said that, though, I still think the historical record ought to be clear. The historical record is reasonably clear, and I think it needs to be brought to the attention of everyone so they can make their own conclusion. I am very much disturbed by what I see is an absolute distortion of the corroborative historical record dealing with the period. And I think whatever conclusions people want to draw about the situation there, they ought to do it on the basis of accurate information. And again, I want to stress, my concern is for the United States and what is best for it and its citizens. And if that happens to coincide with the interests of the Israelis, so be it. If it does not, then we do not need to align ourselves with the Israelis. And I say that remains to be seen. My mind is open. But look, let's take a look at what was said during the time by people who were there at the time. And there was a report that was made in 1913. Now, this is before, while the Ottoman Empire still controlled the area. This is before World War I, because the Ottoman Empire did not fall until 1977 when General Allenby marched into Jerusalem in 1917. And this is a report given by a gentleman named, Sharif Hussein, who is the guardian of Islamic holy places in Arabia. And he said this, the resources of the community are still virgin soil and will be developed by the Jewish immigrants. One of the most amazing things until recent times was that the Palestinian used to leave this country, wandering over the high seas in every direction. His native soil could not retain a hold on him, though his ancestors had lived on it for 10,000 years. At the same time, we have seen the Jews from foreign countries streaming to Palestine from Russia, Germany, Austria, Spain, and America. The cause of causes could not escape those who had a gift of deeper insight. They knew that the country was for its original sons, Abna Ibir al-Alasim, for all their differences, a sacred and beloved homeland. returning these exiles, Jalia, to their homeland will prove materially and spiritually to be an experimental school for their brethren who are with them in the fields, factories, trades, and in all things connected with toil and labor. And I'm telling you, throughout my study of this, I've seen Arab leader after Arab leader pre-World War I saying the same thing. The country was desolate. It was sparsely populated by Palestinians. The numbers of Palestinians did not begin to significantly increase in those regions occupied by the Zionists until they made the area productive. They say this over and over again about the growth of the population. They talk about the immigration from neighboring states, constituting 37% of the total immigration of pre-state Israel by Arabs who want to take advantage of the highest standard of living that the Zionists had made possible. The Arab population grew because of the living conditions created by the Jews as they drained malaria swamps, they brought improved sanitation and health care to the region. The Muslim infant mortality rate fell from 201 per thousand in 1925 to 94 per thousand in 1945, and life expectancy rose from an average of 37 years in 1926 to 49 in 1943. The Arab population increased most in cities where large Jewish populations, or Zionists to be more precise, had created new economic opportunities. From 1922 to 1947, the non-Jewish population went up 290% in Haifa, 131% in Jerusalem, 158% in Jaffa. The growth in Arab towns is more modest, 42% in Nablus, 78% in Jenin, and 37% in Bethlehem. It is indisputable by every objective analysis I've been able to make that those areas were created by the Zionists to be productive and fruitful. And those were the areas that they had purchased from Arab landowners and they were in possession of at the time when the United Nations had the British mandate turned over to them for resolution, and almost every nation in the world in the United Nations in 1948 voted for the two-state solution of the state of Israel and the state of Palestine. They were looking at all those circumstances when they took that vote. And every member of the United Nations Security Council voted for the proposition. That included Russia, that included the Republic of China, and that this is before the communists took over, included Britain, France, and all of them voted. Nobody vetoed it. Obviously, when they're going through, if anybody in the Security Council vetoed it.
Mm-hmm. You catch all that, Eddie?
Yeah, some of it anyway. But who created the United Nations?
I guess there was an impetus behind it because they wanted to do something to address the moribund League of Nations. The League of Nations was ineffectual. By the way, 59 states in the League of Nations voted for the British mandate and to create to study a partition of the land into two states of Israelis or Jews and Arabs. So, but the League of Nations was ineffectual and nobody respected it. And they saw after World War II, the idea was they would have a world body to try to resolve conflicts before they became regional or world wars. And that was the idea. So all of the nations of the world essentially got together and kind of agreed that they needed to have an organization like this that had a little bit of teeth, with all of the nations signing on it to agree to certain terms that the United Nations was established by treaty.
So you said all of that just to answer my question. That's what that was?
Yeah, I believe that's what it predominantly was. Well, now, if you're going to ask me were there insidious forces at work behind the creation of the United Nations, yeah, I'd go along with that. There were. But the stated principle was pretty much what I said. There's always insidious forces behind it, every global movement, always. That'll never go away.
Humane, which is not a good word that I like to use, because to me, human means something different. But anyway, most humane people, God-loving self-respecting people. Their intent is always pure and is demonstrated by equality. Is that their intent? There's a lot of things that goes on this planet, especially over the last 200-300 years, really 1,000 years, but anyway, on this land. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, I just ask you that simple question, because if you look at from the New Deal to this day, there's been other agendas. Do you know who A.G. Gadsden is?
Whom?
A.G. Gadsden.
The name sounds familiar, but I can't recall who that person may be right now.
He is a melanated man whose parents were born and they lived during the time of indigenous people being prisoners of war. He became mm-hmm. a millionaire in the 20s, during the Depression, during the New Deal, and all of the foolishness that took place. The creation of Social Security. It's just so many things, but I just want to throw him out there to demonstrate that sometimes some of the things that we've been told isn't always accurate. Macy's, there's a lot of companies that went out of business during the Depression, supposedly. Was it Macy's? I can't remember. See, I'm kind of getting off track right now because I was...
No.
I am somewhat emotional right now because I just asked one simple question. But most people who really want to know, all they have to do is go to Google and put in what was created between 1950. You'll be surprised at how many things that are body politics right now today of some form that are controlling this landmass, the corporation of the United
mm-hmm.
States. They are controlling.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these individuals that own or control those things are foreigners. The United States Corporation is basically a
mm-hmm.
hub of contractors. Most of the organizations that thrive under that United States Corporation, they are basically subcontractors, which is basically fine. But there are a lot of people who really believe in that corporation who could probably do well to assist if they were allowed to assist with making that corporation a beautiful place. You know, there's people
mm-hmm.
right now, all nationalities mm-hmm. that are American or classified as United States citizens, that really want to eliminate the Constitution and create a new, because they're not satisfied with what the Constitution is, and they don't even like democracy. Some of the people that I've heard speak, all you got to do is go on a lot of apps and just listen to what the people are saying.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
all I'm interested in, and I'll leave it at this: it's mm-hmm. very interesting that the Moors left Spain or ran out of Spain, whatever you want to say. And Christopher Columbus came across the blue waters around the same time. Very interesting. And there's an interesting ancient, well, it's not ancient, but there's a movie that came out, I believe it's called Sleeping Beauty. Now, if you watch the cartoon, the animated one, you'll see that the seven dwarfs wore white caps. Kind of look like fezzes, and they're blue. Usually in animation and in Hollywood, hooray for Hollywood, chaos energy and these things symbolize feet of brass and furrowed hair. So even that story somewhat depicts what happened to the Moors. They cultured that place. They raised that place. They put libraries, Love, True, Peace, Free. Now, I'm not a Moor. I don't classify myself as a Moor, no. But I understand the science. They're the ones who taught the Europeans masonry. I just wanted that simple answer because I got to go. But my point is this. If you just Google and look up who created the United Nations, it would be very interesting. If anybody really wants to know what happened between even positive thought and motivation, most of the books that was written, Think and Grow Rich, and so many of Never Guarded books, there's so many books that really came out between the so-called teens and the 40s. But a lot of things really changed the dynamics of this landmass between that time. A lot of people think that when we were prisoners of war, but a lot of caskets were sealed between the 20s and the 50s. You'd be surprised. When did the Titanic go down? Anyway, I got to get me something to eat. You guys can go on with this conversation. Love and appreciate you, Doctor, me and you. Sarge,
yeah, I'm glad you're with me.
You. I appreciate you, Sarge.
Oh, well.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The history of the United States.
I've enjoyed the conversation. I've enjoyed. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Right. And if you get a chance, if you take the liberty to do it, just look up A.G. Gadsden and see what he did. And, you know, it's a beautiful, powerful story of they basically call him that word again. It's like Black Moses, the Black Madonna, all of these things. They called him the Black Titan. You know, they go that word black again. You know, but the beautiful thing about it was he was a millionaire, so I guess he was in the black. You know, even on the stock market, you know, you in the red, your ass is in trouble. White ain't on the stock market, but if your ass is in the black, oh, you got paper. You got Warren Buffett paper then.
I will look into Mr. Gadsden. He sounds like an interesting man. I'd like to learn something about him. I do appreciate your comments and my ability to rejoin and discuss with you about it. Again, I look forward to having further discussions with you if I'm on the show when you're on with a sister I know.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, fine, sir. Yeah.
You ever heard of the Tartarian? Sorry, I apologize.
Say
I
again?
Asking that question. The Tartarian. You ever heard of Tartarians? Anything like that? That word, Tartarian?
You mean the Tartars in Russia?
Where
the Tartars in Russia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them, yes.
Okay, cool.
Why are you
asking? We'll talk again. There's a few ancient cultures that were from different places. They did some pretty interesting things. They weren't necessarily very, very horrific, but they were definitely organized. You know, just like the Germans, you know. And another thing is
the Germanic tribe, the Visigoths and the Huns and the Vandals and the Franks.
Right. But another thing interesting about Germany, they have statues of melanated people with feathers in their hair and gold around their neck. And those statues were from people from this landmass. If you look up bricks that were made by the Choctaw, those bricks were sold all over the world. And this goes back, you know, thousands of years. So, again, there's more about this landmass that the average person can't even imagine, you know. Most of the gold mines were by indigenous people. I think there's only maybe five that were originated and created by anybody that wasn't indigenous. Melanated, You know, they're still looking for El Dorado. There's a place in California where every now and then indigenous people will come up. They're trying to find out where they are because they're very wealthy people. They don't even communicate or live in society. But anyway, Doc, I'll see if I can get some people together and maybe have a build on your show. But don't blame it on me, okay?
AZ, yes.
Another
Arthur
interesting
George,
book I'm going to say to you.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient and Modern Britain, 1 and 2. That's another. When Rocks Cry Out by Horace Butler. They Came Before Columbus. There's so many books out there. It really talks about this land, even though Ivan said that, I guess about 5,000 years ago, Africans came here. But there's a lot of information out there about, you know, our beautiful toe jam and the places that we've been and how we reside and how we conducted business. You know, very interesting.
Hmm.
You know, but y'all stay blessed. I hope I didn't cause too much distraction.
No. As I always tell people, you know, we start on one topic and it spurts off into other directions and stuff. So let's talk about it while we're here. And it comes up, why not just talk about it? So we don't have to be stuck on the subject, even though sometimes I have to bring people back to what the topic is. But it always circles around. So thank you, Eddie, as always, for joining us. And I'll see if I can't get you and Joe hooked up so that you all can, or you can tell him what you need to tell him. So, no, I just appreciate y'all.
Okay.
Anybody have any announcements they want to have any announcements or anything that they want to say? I'll let the people say and talk about
it. If you're getting ready to wrap up the show, I just kind of like to conclude what I kind of along the themes of what I've said tonight. I want to make it again. I'd like to make clear that, you know, Israel is a sovereign nation. I don't think there's a sovereign nation on the planet whose hands are clean and everything. Israel takes some of the blame for some of the chaos in the region. Like, there's about every sovereign nation pursuing its own selfish self-interest. So Israel is no exception in that regard. But
mm-hmm.
having said that, I when I look at all the efforts at conciliation toward peace, and I'm talking about
mm-hmm.
with regard to efforts to reach out to have their Arab neighbors recognize them
mm-hmm.
as a sovereign nation, just like any other in the world, like Egypt
mm-hmm.
has already done. Egypt has done it. Morocco has done it. Saudi Arabia has done it now. You know, all these other Arab nations are lining up to do it. The problem they're having
mm-hmm.
is with the Palestinians, Hezbollah, Hamas, and Iran. That's the primary problem they're having right now. And given the
mm-hmm.
fact that Palestinian Israelis have all of the rights of any other Israeli citizen, with the one privilege that they are not required to join the armed forces, they can volunteer, but the law says they are exempt from being drafted or conscripted. They have every other right that an Israeli citizen has. So I don't
mm-hmm.
see that happening with any Jew anywhere in any Muslim country. There are Jews in the Knesset. They are the biggest minority faction in the Knesset. Arab Israelis make up 20% of the Israeli population. So I just don't think there's any comparison when it comes to rights given to people in Israel with any other Islamic country in the region. I think any comparison simply do not stand up to scrutiny on that basis.
You're fine. Eddie's already gone. So you have any announcements or anything you want to shout out to the World Wide Web?
Oh, me?
Yes.
Me? Oh, no,
yes.
I'm kind of a hermit. I'm kind of a solitary
okay.
hermit, I guess you might say. I do want to make one shout out, though. I want to encourage
mm-hmm.
one and all and sundry to read as widely as they can everybody's opinion, including your adversaries or your people who disagree with you, get as much information on all sides of the issue as you can so you can best make up your mind. I mean, I think there's no substitute for that. So in that respect, I'd like to give a shout out to everybody on the web who has relevant and pertinent information, no matter what side of the spectrum of an issue you happen to be on.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Okay. Thank you. It's always good to have that conversation because a lot of times we don't have that conversation. So I like to give the people the opportunity to converse with each other. And even though we have differences, we are, you know, we should be able to agree to disagree and agree to agree as well. So that's where we are on that. But announcements, tomorrow night, we'll have Bible study. Then Thursday may continue with Miss Inez says, let's talk about it. We are all slaves. Sunday is Reverend Carolyn Williamson out of Yakima. She speaks to us on that third Sunday. And the next Tuesday, I may have a show. I'm traveling, so I may have a show, not sure. We're going to have a show. And then there's no show that Thursday, Thanksgiving evening. So there's no show that evening. Then June 21st to the 24th of 2024 is World Vitiligo Day, WVD. And they're having a conference in Indianapolis, Indiana. So mark your calendars, get your tickets and hotels early so you'll have a front and a center seat for that conference. And then support Reverend Ronnie Marshall as always with his music that he has. So you can purchase it or listen to it either on all sorts of music media, iTunes, Amazon, YouTube, anything that has to do with music. You should be able to find Ron Marshall. And if you find, Jesus Can Make Me Whole, then you know you found him. And so to keep Let's Do a Radio on the air, holler, sister, and donate through Cash App, Venmo, or Zelle. ANA, $ANAISCVALCOUR for Cash App, Venmo, at MZ-INEZ, or if you know Mattel, you can hit me up on Zelle or my email. So thank you. And if you have a topic you'd like to discuss, holla at the system. You can send an email to me at letsdoradio@gmail.com. And don't forget to share these topics on your social media if you are not a hermit like Sarge is. If you have friends, send it out in a text or however you converse with your friends. So, and if you want to listen to a previous show, you can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/radio. And let's see what else. Again, thank each and every one of you all for joining in. And if you got something on your chest, don't keep it to yourself, but get it off. You can do that on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Join me and Miss Inez says, let's talk about it. And we get some very interesting conversations going and sparked and spurred. So come on and join us on those 2 days. And then if you want to have a little bit of church, come and join us on Sundays. And we might be discussing your topic if you have a topic to discuss. So you know who I'm. I have been your hostess for the evening, Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer of Anais Elko Designs and now a worldwide best-selling author with She Said Yes to Herself Unapologetically. We are number one bestseller in the U.S. and the U.K., so the book is She Said Yes to Herself Unapologetically, and we take orders for $25 plus shipping and handling. So if you want a copy, hit me up, and I can get you that copy for $25 plus shipping and handling, and sign if you want to sign. So the thought of the week is your diet is not only what you eat, it is what you watch, what you listen to, what you read, and the people you hang around. So please pay attention to what you feed your soul, not just your stomach.
And that is the show for this evening. Be safe. Stay safe. You know, get in touch with somebody you haven't talked to in a while, because you never know if what might happen. It may spark some joy in their life, and it may keep them on the earth a tad bit longer. So thank you, thank you, thank you again to those who joined us. We had Joe. We had another person in the Skype, and me and Sarge was in the chat room. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And as always, I'm a Slave to Nothing by Zach Williams. And so see you on tomorrow, same time, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And again on Thursday, same time, 6 p.m., 9 p.m. Eastern with We Are All Slaves as we continue part two on Thursday evening. Thank you. Be blessed. Stay blessed. And have a great evening until I see you again.
You can tell me what I did. You can show me who I was before. Where I fell short, hanging over my head. But I'm not the same anymore. One thing's for sure, the shackles are falling, so I'm showing shame to the door. And make no mistake, I'm a slave to nothing. Oh, I'm a slave, a slave. Tell you where I stand. Guilty is not who I am. No dirt on these hands. Nothing left for me to hide. Liberated and free, justified. Make no mistake, I'm a
again for joining us this evening on Miss Inez Says Let's Talk About It. We are all slaves, and we will continue on Thursday, part two. Have a great evening. Be safe, stay safe, and love each other and love on each other. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Good evening.